Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The Suns and the Bucks are getting ready to go at it. And while they probably weren't anyone's first or second choice for this, I think they're still perfect for exactly where we're at now. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz from 7 to 9 Eastern on ESPN Radio, filling in for Chinay Agwumake today as Jason and myself really still basking in the afterglow of the 105th anniversary of the Nathan's Famous hot dog eating contest that we are a part of this weekend, Jason. I was up in the play-by-play booth. You were down on the sidelines manning the sideline reporting duties there in the splash zone, as they call it. So have you managed to pull the chunks of hot dog out of your hair yet?
Yeah, you know, speaking of hair, let's just, you know, pull down the fourth wall here and tell everybody this. Like, my head and the sides of my head, because, you know, I got a fresh cut on Friday. I want to look good for TV audience, right? Oh, my God. Like, so burned. Showering is so painful at this point. I had no idea that I was out there, you know, in the sun getting that sunlight. And all of a sudden, I got home and, you know, Mike may have pointed out to, as we were heading back from New York, that I smelled like hot dogs. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go home and shower that off. And I got in the shower and it was like a little needles just pinpricking the entire top of my head, Mike. So I don't know. Life was cushy for you up there in the booth, but I'm down there getting sprayed on, watching all sorts of just wet bun go everywhere and, you know, getting my head all burned. Like, now it hurts to shower.
Jason, I have a sunburn down the middle of my bald head in the shape of the headset that I was wearing in the booth here. So don't cry to me about how bad my scalp hurts. All of mine, all 100% of mine, is exposed to the cruel rays of the sun. How dare you?
You know, you could have just had to move the monitor like 3 feet back and you would have been in shade where you were.
You know what, Jason? I didn't, because I had a job to do, and I took that seriously this weekend.
And you did a wonderful job, by the way.
As serious as Joey Chestnut took his job of lifting up a nation by eating 76 hot dogs and buns this weekend here. Jason, are you like me? We probably get asked to do more media leading up to the coverage of the hot dog contest on ESPN on July 4th than anything else we do in the year. Everyone wants to know how many hot dogs I could eat in 10 minutes here, as if I am at all in shape for that anymore as an athlete.
I mean, well, I did watch you just absolutely, like, we had breakfast at the ballpark like, you know, Americans on the 4th of July. We had hot dogs and french fries.
9:30 in the morning, the way God intended.
It's astounding watching Mike, just the regular version of Mike. I would imagine this is like a gym rat that's actually a really good basketball player compared to the NBA. I understand the difference.
But I am the Brian Scalabrine of meals now, even as a reformed fat.
I mean, Three Bite Mike should be your nickname, because it's like, and then it's gone. Like, all of it's gone. I was still working on my fries, which, by the way, were so fresh that they were a little bit hot for my, like, temperature was a little bit high. I look over, Mike's done with the whole thing, and he's got, like, the trash cleaned up, he's ready to go, and he's just chugging down a Gatorade. Like, you've got a gift. I think you could, I don't think you could, if you trained for it, I think you could get into the 30s in the 10-minute mark.
Oh, my God, no, Jason. See, this is, again, where we have this conversation about, are these eaters athletes or not? What I always have a respect for is, I played Division I football at Notre Dame. It's pretty, like, big accomplishment when you look at it in the vacuum here. But I was really, all told, in college, pretty average football player. It took so much work just to start 17 games in college and be okay in the process here. Like, I know how much work it took to do that. And so every time I go out and golf on the weekends and suck at that and get mad at myself, I'm like, how do I have any right to get mad? Much the same way, like, yeah, recreationally, do I love to absolutely annihilate meals to the point where I've had waitresses look on in horror as I am hoovering an entire plate of food, and they come over. I had a waitress legit tell me, you know I'm not going to take that from you, to which my response was, I don't know that, and so don't worry about me.
This sounds like someone who would be very good at it. You've been eating your whole life. Right? You've been playing football
been
for a very long time.
This.
Yeah, you've been practicing for a long. You've been eating your whole entire life since you were born. You haven't been playing football that long.
No, listen, I understand that. But again, the difference and the reason I'm comfortable when we talk to these people and call them athletes is because, again, we all run into stuff. We all get in fights. We all wrestle from the time we're little kids on and do stuff like that. But the difference between that and becoming an offensive lineman is I got to spend years working on the technique, honing all of these things here, much the same way these eaters got to learn how to break these hot dogs in two, dunk the buns the right way, make sure they're shimmying it down their body here. There's an art and a science to this.
But maybe you're underselling, like, maybe you're naturally gifted, like you're the Mozart of possible major league eating. Like, I don't know. I mean, we went to a place for dinner to watch the NBA game the night before, and, you know, we both got similar dishes, and I was like two bites in.
It was ramen, yeah.
I was two bites in.
It was really good, too.
The waitress walked up and was like, well, you didn't like yours at all, as I'm like two bites in, and he's got the napkin in the bowl, like showing the world, hey, not only is this done, but I can put my napkin in the bottom of a soup bowl, and it won't get wet because I took so much of the liquid out.
Show mama how the piggies eat.
Here's the difference between you and, as you said, most reformed fats. You have been eating in short spurts your entire career in radio because you have no choice. You have 4 to 5 minutes between commercial breaks and to eat an entire meal. You've been practicing without even knowing that you've been practicing for this.
You know what? Maybe I've been Miyagi'd by ESPN radio into being a high-level competitive eater. All this time, I thought I was sleeping up out in the hallways, eating Christine Lisi's baked goods seconds before I go on air. Maybe all this time, you're right, Devin.
I mean,
maybe next year I'm going to have to get involved. You guys might have convinced me mid-segment here.
I've sat in the splash zone now, and I've worked in the splash zone. I'm not sure the sound is that much different than what it's like just being at a steakhouse with you, Mike. And I got to be honest, like, if there's ever a way you're going to get a 30 for 30 at this network, it's Mike transitioning to Major League Eating where he takes down Joey Chestnut for the championship.
You as his coach, it'd be incredible.
Oh, no, I'm not going to be the coach, but I will wear a full, like, Jimmy Mouth of the South Heart thing and, like, megaphone it right in the front. Like, when I don't like the referee count, I'll get right in there and be like, that was a hot dog, it counts, just for you.
I was going to say, Jason Fitz is going to fully transition to what I believe his true destiny is in life, is to be a dance mom. Like, to be one of those awful sports parents that's out here berating officials in public. Like, Jason, this is your destiny here. As we are Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golick Jr. and Jason Fitz, I think your destiny is to be an absolutely obnoxious dance mom.
I don't know. Like, I think if I could go back and reinvent my entire life, really being, you know, a pro wrestling manager is really would have been like, all I got to do is run my mouth. If I get hit, I can lay down and I can yell about it. And realistically, everybody else that's bigger than me has to back up what I'm saying. It sounds like my 20s, just in a glorified sports entertainment way. So
I've often said Jason Fitz is like every backup quarterback I ever played with, because they're always the one that wants to talk at the bar, and then I'm the guy that has to throw the guy out.
And also dashingly good-looking. Backup quarterbacks, good-looking dudes.
Fitz, I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, we're kind of off the rails a little bit.
We're
going to keep feeding into
it. It's July 5th.
Do you think you could cut a 15-second 30-for-30 promo as Mike Golick Jr. transitions? We have music. Do you think you can do this? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Do we want to do this now, or do we want to give Jason time to collect his thoughts and do this on the other side of the break here?
I don't need time to collect my thoughts.
Yeah, we can do it right now.
All right, Jason Fitz is...
This is a 30 for 30 intro, right?
Yeah, we'll lead you in with music.
This is a 30 for 30 intro from my transition from sports talk radio host to competitive eater as narrated by Fitz.
Yeah, I got this. We'll improv this. What if I told you one man with one vision couldn't be defined by his past and would only use his past to fuel the greatness of his future? From a legend on air to a legend in front of thousands, this is the journey of one man from the seat to the splash zone and the championships that he then was able to take home. This is the 30 for 30 of Mike Golick Jr.
That was pretty good.
Great delivery on that.
Thank you.
By the way, I've got the title for you here. ESPN 30 for 30 presents Big Boys Don't Cry. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN. Coming up next, are we actually excited for the NBA Finals?
Yes!
We're supposed to do this.
Chenan and Golick Jr., the podcast.
Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golick Jr. and Jason Fitz. Coming in about 10 minutes, June Lee, our ESPN baseball writer, is going to join us here. as we get closer to the Midsummer Classic, Jason, and start to look around, Shohei Ohtani, I heard Jeff Passan say it's more Bo Jackson than Babe Ruth, and it feels kind of like that phenomenon does this year. Like, you're just watching something different because it's so physically dominant. Like, it just, it sounds different when he hits it, as crazy as it sounds to say.
Well, and I think, you know, in a year where we've seen dominant pitching, or I should say dominant hitting, to the point that we're watching pitchers have to justify everything that's on their hands and on their bodies, it's interesting to see somebody that's dominating as a hitter and then also an all-star as a pitcher. I think that's part of what, like, in a year where it's become so us versus them on hitting versus pitching, to have somebody that's crushing at both of them just feels transcendent. It feels different.
I'm not going to lie, Jason. At this point where we're at with Shohei, if you made the pitching non-existent, I would still be just as enamored as I am right now. Like, it goes back to my theory that in baseball, we just want big, loud American dingers. Like, this guy with 30 home runs through this half of the season so far, pacing the major league, doing all these things he's done. Like, that was the baseball I grew up with as a kid, is big, physically impressive mutants. Now, those ones were aided by some foreign substances there, but big, physically impressive monsters mashing home runs the way that Shohei has at almost every turn. Because it doesn't matter high, low, like, the range of pitches that this guy has sent yard is insane.
By the way, if we ever put out a record together, it's going to be called Big Loud American Dingers. That's just perfect record title, by the way. I'm all in for that. But you're right. And especially, this feels like a little bit of the NBA conversation that comes into Major League Baseball in a positive way. Like, the NBA, for everybody that will, through the course of the finals, want to talk about ratings, I would beg people, especially people in media reporting, to actually educate themselves on where the NBA puts their emphasis, which is truly on digital highlights and the way that things are consumed. We've talked about that before. SportsCenter on Snapchat gets massive numbers for ESPN, and it's largely because people want to see, they want to see great NBA highlights. They don't really care about the story of the game. They care about the great dunk or the great shot. And at some level this year, one of the things that you have the opportunity with when you're talking about Shohei, you're talking about a human highlight reel in the way the home runs look, because they are so substantial. It carries to a different level. And through the conversation of how do you continue to get people from outside the sport or younger audiences to really gravitate towards something, it's to do it in a massive way. And that's what Shohei's doing.
Chenane Gold Jr. here is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. So we'll talk more with June Lee about that coming up in just a bit. But Jason, you and I both work a lot in college football. We enjoyed Name, Image, and Likeness Week last week for all who celebrated, as college athletes were allowed to finally profit.
It's like a holiday.
It felt like a holiday. Well, like, it really did, Jason, because I know you skew pro player the way I do in a lot of things. I obviously was a player, and so I was really excited to see this. A lot of people asked, you know, were you upset it didn't happen for you? I was lucky. Like, I came from means. I'm doing fine now, and so I don't have to look back and wonder. I wouldn't begrudge someone if they did, but I'm just genuinely happy to see, like, a generation of college players now getting to march forward on this. One thing I saw that was real interesting, though, is a conversation that I've been asked about a lot as a former player is, do you think it would divide the locker room, this whole notion of that? And I saw a report from Ross Dellinger that said Miami quarterback De'Aaron King is looking to split the money evenly with teammates who have to send stipend checks home to their struggling families. Jason, there is this notion that people look at this, and obviously I think objectively it is admirable, but I don't think this is a necessary thing that guys would have to do. As you look around here, as you look at the situation now, do you really think that players getting this influx of money is going to be a negative effect on locker rooms? Because we haven't talked about this.
No, not at all. I locker rooms are, and I will, obviously I'm 5'9 and a quarter and 165 pounds. What the hell do I know about a locker room? But I've talked to enough people that have been in locker rooms that I feel like I can confidently say, locker rooms are a place of diversity, and by diversity, I don't just mean what you look like, I mean where you came from. So locker rooms are very accepting to everybody having different situations that brought them there, from everybody I've ever talked to. So much like tour buses and bands, like, don't care how you got there, we're all on the same gig together. So the fact that, you know, some people are going to be lead singers in this band and others are going to be drummers and they're treated differently, is part of the culture that's understood. So I think, does this create a divide in the locker room? No. Does it create other people looking around saying, hey, how'd you get that opportunity? Can you introduce me to somebody? Is there somebody I can meet? Yeah, I think people will look at it and say, how can I get more for myself if you're doing really well? I think it's the opposite of what most people think will happen from a locker room.
Yeah, that's the thing, Jason. I think people get this really wrong about where this might come from. Like, you were, for anyone that somehow doesn't know, Jason Fitz was the fiddle player in the band Perry, a very successful country music act, for a number of years, in addition to other things. But Jason, anywhere along your line with the band, did you think that you were going to be treated the same or should as the Perrys?
No, I mean, like, the number of times we would play, I got emotional. I'll never forget the first time I played the national anthem for my beloved Raiders, because I was playing by myself on fiddle, and they brought me a jersey that said Fitz on it. I still have it at my house, number 24, because it was Charles Woodson Appreciation Day. That was probably, no exaggeration, in my career, 150th sporting event I'd played where jerseys were handed out, and that's the first time I ever got one. Because my name's not Perry. So you don't get them when your name's not Perry. And you don't sit there and be like, man, like, just give me that jersey. Like, you don't. You look at it and say, okay, that's the way it goes. Their face is on the record cover. And when your face is on the when you're on the poster, you get treated different. And you know that. You know that certain people are going to make 10 times what you make every show. Like, that's just part of the culture of being in the music business. And you get used to it because that's the way business is done.
That's the thing I think people don't understand. And this comes to what everyone views happens with money, right? Like, I'm a big believer that money doesn't change anybody. It just exposes what was already there, right? Because De'Aaron King, what he's doing here, again, super admirable. This idea that if he makes a bunch of money, which he's already made tens of thousands of dollars in endorsements since this has started, saying he wants to give this to teammates that are struggling. That's an admirable thing, but it's not required. It's not necessary. That's not his job to do, to fill these inequities and the gaps in the system here. Because I would look at this and say, yeah, as an offensive lineman and a guy who was mostly a career backup until my last couple of years at school, I didn't expect to be treated like Manti Te'o or Tyler Eifert or any of the guys yeah. that were, you know, going to be the stars, the quarterbacks on our team right here. Now, there might be some jealousy, and there might have been then, because I was a guy that worked well with the media because I had a last name that certainly was going to bring some added attention from outside eyeballs. And there could be some of that where players who have large social followings, who are good dealing with the media, got a good YouTube page, maybe get more than a starter. Those are dynamics that already exist in locker rooms right now. There are players that lack the self-awareness to understand why a starter who's balling out is getting more attention than they are if they believe they're getting wronged. That's not going to change. It's not going to invent a dynamic that doesn't already exist. It might exacerbate it a little bit, but it's not going to flip anything that's not already there as far as the feelings of resentment that come in a locker room.
And the other important thing to me is, even if it does, even if 1 out of 100 kids gets angry about it the wrong way.
You're right, because that is possible.
Even if that happens, are we willing to limit the opportunity for everybody else to save the 1 out of 100? And that, to me, is just such a strong and easy question to answer. It is a strong no. I will not limit the opportunity for a gymnast that may never have the opportunity to go out and make money in their sport, that's now going to, they, according to reports, sign a multi-million-dollar marketing contract. That gymnast deserves that opportunity. And I'm not going to suddenly turn around and say she can't have it because it protects 4 players that are really, really in their fields all of a sudden over at this football program. It's not worth that to me.
And I'm certainly not going to limit or say what they should do once that money is theirs. Again, what De'Aaron King is doing is admirable, and it's great for him, but other college players should not feel pressured to follow if that's not what's on their heart or if that's not what they're financially able to do in that position. At Jason Fitz, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter is where you can hit us up. Coming up next, though, just how incredible is what we're seeing from Shohei Ohtani as we head closer and closer to the All-Star game? And if he wins the Home Run Derby, does this thing climb even higher? We'll ask that after this word from RumbleOn. Now, do you have a motorcycle, an ATV, even a truck that's just sitting in your garage that you've been waiting to sell? Well, with RumbleOn.com, you can easily turn your unused vehicle into cash in just minutes. RumbleOn.com is going to give you a cash offer for your vehicle, and it's going to pick it up for free anytime, anywhere. They can even finance your next Harley, Polaris, Can-Am, Yamaha, and even more if you're just looking to upgrade. See what RumbleOn can do for you by visiting RumbleOn.com. Fast bikes, faster cash. Back after this with June Lee on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We've talked so much about great sports stories through this year, players that have come out of nowhere, risen to prominence, stars made in certain leagues. Coming up next, did one star just light every ounce of goodwill that he had garnered on fire in front of a crowd of people? Jan Engel Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, Mike Golic Jr. and Jason Fitz. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes. But one star in Shohei Ohtani has done just the opposite. He continues to only climb higher and higher on the spectacle scale. For more on that and what's going around as we have now hit the halfway point of Major League Baseball season, ESPN writer June Lee joins us on the Goodyear Hotline. June, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, buddy. We appreciate you giving us some time on the holiday weekend here. And I want to start with Shohei. I mean, I know we kind of almost wear out this idea of what a phenomenon he's been in the sport. But for all the lofty expectations, June, of a guy who's now heading into the All-Star break as a pitcher, a guy going into the All-Star game as a pitcher, doing what he's done as a hitter as well, has he exceeded every and all expectation we could have possibly thrown at this guy?
Goalie, I mean, like, we could talk about Shohei Ohtani. I still feel like it's not enough Shohei Ohtani talk because it's truly unprecedented what he's doing. I was looking at the stats of what Babe Ruth has done, which is obviously kind of the easy place to go with him, right? Babe Ruth, the pitcher and the hitter. But Babe Ruth only had one season in 1919 where he kind of did both of those things at a league above average level. He was with the Red Sox. He was kind of a league average pitcher, and he was a really good hitter back then, obviously. Shohei Ohtani is pitching at a better level than he is. And he's hitting. I mean, the fact that he's at 30 plus home runs at the All-Star game, at the All-Star break, is unbelievable. And so I think we need to start recontextualizing what he's doing and not comparing him to anyone else, because there's not really comparison for what he's doing. Shohei Ohtani is being Shohei Ohtani. And I truly think, and I've been saying this on Twitter and I've been saying this on other shows, but I really think the only other comparison is that Ohtani is kind of the closest thing that we have to like Bo Jackson in this era right now. Someone who's able to excel at such a high level at basically two different sports, because pitching and hitting are two different sports within the same sport.
June, if we just took away the pitching element, if we just left him as what he's been doing as a hitter right now, I contend it would still be equally as impressive. Like, if we arrived at that point where what he's done, especially as a power hitter, has started to maybe get to a point where that conversation about specializing becomes more and more prominent in the future here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Daisuke Matsuzaka came over, right, there was this incredible myth around him as the guy who threw the gyro ball and how he was the best pitcher in Japan and how he was this incredible high school pitcher at Koshen and he was going to come over and be an ace in the big leagues. And obviously that didn't work out. Shohei had higher expectations than that. And he's not only fulfilled those expectations, but he's exceeded them. He's doing stuff that, like, we couldn't even expect to have happened. And the fact that he's hitting at basically, like, he's hitting the ball as hard as Giancarlo Stanton and also hitting it at a consistent rate that Stanton is unable to hit at. Like, Ohtani doesn't really have a peer right now in terms of what he's doing at the plate, in terms of power. And obviously we have to see over the course of the full season. Like, it's going to be interesting to see over the course of the rest of this year whether or not he's able to hold up from a health standpoint. I was at Yankee Stadium the other night when he pitched after hitting, you know, a bunch of homers against the Yankees, and he had his worst outing of the season. So obviously you don't want to see that when you kind of have these expectations for Ohtani, but he's hitting at a level that is not, he doesn't really have a peer right now other than someone like Vladdy Jr. And Fernando Tatis. And then you throw in the fact that he's pitching, it's just kind of hard to wrap your head around kind of the feats that he's doing on the field on a night-to-night basis.
You know, June, you just mentioned health as a factor in all of this. When you're in uncharted territory for the team to try and figure out, when we've never seen this before, how to maximize the length of his career, make sure everything's right for him health-wise, how do they sort of figure that out when this is such a new spot to be in?
Well, I think you have to let Shohei kind of do his thing and see where the limits are. Let and trust him to kind of speak up when things are hard. Obviously, he had Tommy John surgery, but, you know, he's a physical specimen. He's just, and just a baseball player that's so unprecedented that I think you just have to see how far we can stretch this greatness. And I don't think that he's going to be physically capable of doing both the hitting and pitching thing into, like, his mid-30s. But it will be interesting to see, you know, as we move forward with his career, whether or not, like, you know, is it possible that he continues to be mostly a full-time pitcher and then becomes a reliever, a swingman, or a closer in the bullpen. These are all things that are up in the air. And just the fact that we're having this conversation right now is just, like, a baseball nerd myself, is just, like, so exciting that this is even, like, a realistic possibility long-term. And whether or not teams are going to, you know, start considering their best athletes as a potential two-way player moving forward. Obviously, Shohei in some ways is a unicorn, but it'll be interesting to see whether or not there's guys at the lower levels who want to do this at, you know, 80% of what Shohei Ohtani is doing right now.
Chenin Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio talking to our ESPN writer, June Lee. You mentioned Stanton in that talk. Obviously, a rough Subway Series for the Yankees over the weekend. What territory are we at? Where's the panic meter with this team from blow it up to some tinkering as we get halfway through the season here?
I think from like a narrative standpoint with the Yankees, they're like the worst possible scenario in that like they'll have 1 week where they kind of raise the hopes again and they're like, oh, maybe they're getting out of it. And then they'll have a week where they suck and they look bad and they are screwing up all their fundamentals. And they're basically a 500 team. I mean, that's pretty much what it amounts to right now. They're, you know, giving us hope giving Yankees fan hopes 1 week and, you know, letting them down the next. And so I think the Yankees are kind of at this earlier crossroads than where most teams are, where they have to make a move early and try to get ahead of this. Because if they do anything now, I mean, Brian Cashman didn't rule out the fact that they could be sellers at the deadline. And it's not just the rest of the division that they're facing, right? The Blue Jays are ahead of them. The Rays are ahead of them. The Red Sox are ahead of them. But it's also the other wildcard teams, the Athletics, the Cleveland Baseball Club. Like, there's a lot of other teams in the picture here. And so the Yankees have a really high path. Obviously, they have a lot of talent on their roster, so you can't rule them out completely. But there's a lot of things that need to go right for this team to be able to make the playoffs from just a fundamental standpoint and just like a general like energy standpoint as well, I think.
It's going to be very interesting to see as we are already now over the halfway mark, I believe Friday of last week in the major league season. It's wild to think summer's already moving at that pace here, but with the entertainment we've seen, it's not surprising. June, we appreciate the time, buddy. Have a good one.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, guys.
June Lee, our ESPN writer, kind enough to give us a few minutes on the holiday weekend here. All right, coming up next, I think we're going to be able to show you a record for the time it takes for one player to turn an entire fan base against him here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN 30 for 30 presents Reversal of Fortune. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz, the voice you heard there.
You know, for people that don't know, you always yacked before big games, or before every game, right?
I puked before every football game I ever started in high school or college.
Did you puke before your first TV or radio show?
No. The first time I was filling in on Mike and Mike, back when that was still going on, I slept for maybe 45 minutes that night because I thought I was going to say a swear word on air and it was going to be the last time they ever let me in the building here. And I know a lot of people wish that had happened at that point, but guess what? Not yet.
That is alarming only because I remember my first ever TV show. We were together, my first ever TV show. And, you know, there's this thing in TV, they call it a rundown, and you get it right before, and it shows you what you're going to be talking about.
We in the biz call it a rundown.
Well, it's only significant because the producer walked up, James Dunn, and said, here's your rundown 5 minutes before our first show. We hadn't done a rehearsal. We had just met each other that day. He says, here's your rundown. I said, awesome. What's a rundown? And he's like, oh, my God, you've never done this before. I'm like, yeah, I have no idea what I'm looking at. I've never seen this before in my life. And I remember Sunny was there at the time, and she was in the studio, and we walked out. She was so nervous the whole time because she was just convinced I was going to say the F word somewhere on air. So we have that in common, buddy.
Yeah, and I was going to say, listen, fear of the F word is a good thing. It'll get you far in this business,
That's
kids.
The name of our band, Fear the F Word.
Thank you to everyone that joined us on this July 5th edition of Chenin and Golic Jr. Jen Latta from ESPN Milwaukee, Jeremy Fowler, our ESPN NFL reporter, and of course our ESPN baseball writer, June Lee, who just joined us. If you missed any of that, check out the podcast today. Boy, is it a doozy. Let's keep that same energy. Great job, by the way, by Matlack Devin coming up with that 30 for 30 on the fly here. Very excited for anyone who is possibly listening to accuse us of stealing from the Levitard show.
Wow. It's all Matlack. Literally.
I thought it was a great idea by Devin. Go ahead.
Keeping that same energy. This NBA postseason run, we talked about so many of the guys that made the star turn. You know, Devin Booker from the Suns, Trae Young, obviously, with the Hawks. On and on down the list here. I thought someone who made an unexpected rise was Kevin Huerter. He got himself a nickname, Red Velvet, the redheaded shooter that really, I mean, systematically ended the previous series that the Atlanta Hawks were in with the 76ers by just hunting down Seth Curry when he was matched up with him. So Kevin Huerter got a lot of people on his side. At State Farm Arena Atlanta, they did a sort of March Madness style bracket of rappers that they were going on with, and they would put a matchup up on the board, they would bring a Hawks player's picture up on there, and they would have him pick the matchup here. And so I want to get this right. Kevin Huerter gets up there, and this is in Atlanta. You've got a matchup between Rich the Kid and Outkast. This is a second round matchup. I'm assuming in Atlanta, Outkast is the number one overall seed. And comes Kevin Huerter wandering up on the Jumbotron in front of a crowd at State Farm. That immediate tidal wave that you heard was Kevin Huerter picking Rich the Kid in Atlanta over Outkast. I don't want any excuses for youth, because you are a player in Atlanta. You are part of a team in a city that reveres this group, that understands the acts that are near and dear to that place. There's no excuse for this, Jason. He lit all that goodwill on fire in front of a crowd of people.
Yeah, and by the way, like, he was wrong too. I mean, the Outkast are legends at this point, but you're right. When you can't talk about Atlanta and you can't talk about hip hop in Atlanta without having Outkast come into the conversation in roughly 6 seconds. Like, it's part of the entire wiring of the city.
You know what? The worst part about this is Cliff, who's usually on the show, is working on a different show today. He comes in here to just start trolling us, acting like this was at all a good decision by Rich the Kid here. We're going to have to put this up on Cliff's board of bad takes, because this seems like it's trending in that direction right now. It's sad. It's sad what's happening around here, Jason.
This is the new Atlanta, baby. Come on, Rich the Kid all day.
You know who sounded like they were down with the new Atlanta, Cliff? Absolutely no one in that arena. So look, I think it got voted. So I think they're fine with the old Atlanta. I think that was the message that we got.
I mean, I just looked it up to make sure that maybe I'm not a total moron, because I'm a partial moron. But Rich Kid's last record topped out at 17 on the R&B and hip-hop charts, 24 overall on the top 200. That's the best he's done on a chart. And you're talking about Outkast? You're talking about Outkast?
Oh, honestly, that really can't be his top. I doubt
that's
it.
That's the quick look here.
I don't know if you know Jason Fitz had a Grammy vote.
I mean, I'll double check it. We'll see. World Is Yours might have done. I thought World Is Yours would do better, but I'll look here and see.
Yeah, what?
Nope.
What are we? Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, keeping that same energy. Did anyone see? We've been watching the Euros around here at ESPN. Great job on the coverage by everyone involved. Italian soccer player, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this name right, Ciro Immobile?
We're going to go Ciro
Immobile. Which is a great name for this story.
Which is a great name for a guy, yes, exactly, who in the middle of a play here in their game, one of the more epic flops you'll ever see here, writhing on the ground in pain, as we've often seen. After his team, after Italy scores a goal here, you see him look around, get up, and jog over to his teammate, Jason. At what point are we going to tolerate this? Because I'm out here. We got Team USA in town here for the women's national team in Connecticut. I watched them play a game against Team Mexico last week in a torrential downpour. There was no stoppage time at the end of the first half, Jason, because there's no flopping in women's professional soccer here. How long are we going to tolerate
this? That's a really good point, by the way, that it's so much different in the women's game. Like, it at least speaks to the soccer strategy guy that comes back and says it's part of the game. It doesn't have to be. And realistically, when we see this on the broadcast, soccer has to look at it. They have to look at these events and say, what are we going to do, even retroactively, to turn around later and say, okay, that obviously wasn't cool, so here's a punishment for it.
You know what I think they're not going to do in the middle of all that? Try and look up and see where Rich the Kid charted.
No, he did have one record go to number two. I will correct myself. He did have his first record went to number two.
For everyone that tuned into ESPN Radio today, on July 5th, to find out where Rich the Kid has charted the highest, congratulations. Your reward? More Jason Fitz coming up next on Spade and Fitz here on ESPN Radio.
What a show.